Session number 16715, John Jarvis, Reel 13.
Mr. Jarvis, Reel 13. How old was the youngest member of your band? Did you have teenage children, that kind of age, with you?
No. The only young people that we'd have would be people that had been burned out, something like that, you know, further away. And very rare we got them, people like that. No.
Did you have any quite old men amongst you, or people amongst you?
Well, in the mountains, the people that told, the people we experienced. And you need experienced people, especially people like me, you know. I used to learn every day different knickknacks how to live in the mountains. And these people, they lived in the mountains all their life, and they knew every... They were goats, you know. They're invaluable, some of them. And even at 60 and 65, some of these men can walk over the mountains as if they were just going for the stroll along the level. You know, the rail... Fantastic people, very, very healthy. You know, they used to drink the vino and eat the common food. Can you imagine you going out and crushing your corn, you know, maize, crushing your powder and baked in a tin and cut like dough, and, you know, and a lump of cheese. You know, that was your dinner, and you were going up the mountains to cut wood and carry it down. Everything was undone. Even the air they got from the mountains, they was put in like a bag, sewn together, you know, like a big bag, put on the shoulders, carried down, put in, barn, way back up for another load. Maybe do 3 load a day. Maybe take them 2 hours to get up and back down, you know. But they did it. It was all manual, and they were used to. Get up in the morning. I used to say, wind the boogers up in the morning, they'll go all day, you know, with the same winding up. And they up the mountains, and they'd cut the grass, and they'd cut the wood, and... Because you used to get a terrific winter, you know.
How did you survive the winter out in the wilds there, in your caves or whatever?
The first winter we were up in the cave, where it was a big, like a communal cave. A real good... You had to be careful with your fires, you know. But say, the snow was one, was our enemy. It was also an enemy of the Germans. They kind of come out and walk mountains in the snow. See, so as long as we had a stir food in, it was monotonous. See, and that's why during that period, I took that period, maybe 3 months, we were stagnant, you know. I used to learn Italian, and a bit trouble getting pens and paper and things like that, and books, you know. It's marvellous where you get bits of books. And I had a lad with us, he was a student of... He's wanting to go to America after the war, and he was wanting to learn English. And he was very, very keen. In fact, he was time still keen for me. you'll stop me some of that, you know. And a man thinks he knows his own language until he's got to learn another one from it, you know. Different verbs and this and that. And, I mean, for me, there's past and there's present and there's future, and that suffices. But he wanted to know the lot, you know. And he was intrigued by the language. He was, he was a good scholar. I believe he never told us, but I believe he must have went to Milan University.
What was his name?
No, there's no names. We never. All the time I was there, there was no names. We all had our own nicknames. We called nicknames, nom de plumes, you know. Even I had a card, like a red card. Showing I was a Garibaldini that I'd served with the partisan movement in the north of Italy, but at the bottom had Mario Inglesi, Maggiore Inglesi, you know, that was it. There was no names ever, you know. I knew the names of a couple of the villages, you know, but I never used to funny them about. It was so dangerous, you know. It was
fastened in the mountains during the winter, and you couldn't get around so much. You said that you were learning languages.
Uh-huh.
Did the boredom in any way cause problems within the band itself?
Why, little bits of patches, and, you know, sometimes woman trouble, you know.
But they tend to get excited, Italians, do they not?
But you see, at time wasn't many Italians there. It was the Hobbs and Nobs like us that stopped there, and the Yugoslavians, and there was Austrian, and this and that, and there's a lot of the South African over there, he got there, I don't know, but he was, he got killed, shot, I believe that, he's buried in one of the churches up there, I believe, certain of it.
But was that when he's with you on a band operation, when he was shot?
Well, you see, they used to come and go, these people, and you get about it if you start it. There's something else said to me over there, you put up with this. Well, I said, I've been in prison camp, I'd rather put up with this than being in prison camp. At least I can go and get myself something to eat, and a drink of coffee and a meat sandwich. I said, when I was in prison camp, I couldn't get that, bunny lad. I can put up with this. As soon as that sandwich yard's done again, I'll be in that river and I'll be fishing and I'll be, you know, I'll be enjoying myself. And I said, I can put up with that. I said, one thing's certain, I'm not going back in prison camp no more. And why we're going down to meet our lads coming up. And I said, they're 400 bloody mile away. You know, but that had like, some of them you couldn't talk to them. So I'd finish it, they used to come and they used to go. And I tell you, the South African lad, he stopped maybe about a month. And I think he must have gotten on with a girl. He wasn't British South African, he was a Boer. He was a Dutch German, a Gutler type. He wasn't a bad lad, nothing wrong with the lad, you know. But me and him was, we weren't bosom pals, you know. We'd converse at times, but
Had he been in the army or the air force? Or?
I never asked him. Never asked questions like that. Never asked. I tell you, did I tell you about the officer that came? There was once an officer that came, a British uniform on, and they thought he was a spy. Because there was different between British and Germans, you know. And he wrote, word got to me that I had to go over to this place. I hadn't let myself be known. I just had to walk in the room and sit down and listen to this blog being interrogated. So I believe it took us 5 days. 4 or 5 days to get there. And when I got there, I went in the room, and this bloke was in, and they were asking him questions and that. And then the leader come into me, the leader of this partisan group come to me, and he says, Inglesi or Tedeschi? I said, oh, he's English. Are you sure? I said, I'm certain, I'm positive. I said, I know the way he talks. I said, the German, no German talk like that. I said, he's English. Well, he said, would you have a word with him? I said, ah. But I said, I said, I'm just going to do it my own way. Right, you do it. And I went and... Apparently, I don't know, at them times I didn't take... If he'd said he could have took me back home, I'd have been interested, you know. He was looking for some type of airfield. You see them little planes, light planes that are in there, they used to mark airfield out on a little bit flat land at the top of the mountain, and they used to come down and land in about 50 yards, pick them up and off, just like that. Then I thought, well, I might get a ride home here, than us. And that's the only way I was interested in. It didn't matter to me about him being an officer and what the hang he was. The only value to me was he might take us home. So we got on top, and he said, would you escort us down this mountain to the next group? And I know what he was making for Yugoslavia, you know, they had bits of airfields all over the place, little bits of, you know. There was a couple of lights out, and the plane was... And you know what I says, huh? And I says, well, to get round to where you want to be, I says, we've got to pass this very, very dangerous corner where the Germans has got 50, right at the strategic point of the pass, where the bridge is and all that. I says, and this big hotel. And I says, it's very dangerous. I says, we'd have to go out at night and we'd have to mountain. I'll manage, he says. Because he wasn't a young fella. I don't know. He wasn't old, but he wasn't young.
Had he been dropped, or had he come through escape prisoner war?
He wasn't a prisoner war, no.
So he'd been dropped?
He's either been dropped or brought in. For some reason, I don't know why, man. I had no idea why, because I didn't want to ask him. All I asked him was, he in the band. I'd have got in the band, would have been given a chance, I'd have sat in his knee anyway. No, I didn't ask him. I didn't, I just told him, I said, I point out the dangers to you. And I says, tonight, we'll start. I said, I'll pick men, and I says, we'll take you round. But I said, let's get it clear before we start, it's very, very dangerous. And I says, if the worst comes to the worst, you'll have to fend for yourself a lot, you know. I says, we cannot. I says, we cannot even without waiting for you, you know. I says, we've got to get round that corner, out the road, sharp. If we were that done, we've had it. There'd be no messing about that. He'd just blown us off the face of the earth. I know, we took him round. I believe he gave me a pack of players with five in or something like that. I didn't know. I remember having a pack of players with five in. I didn't smoke then. I couldn't get any. So I gave the eye tie to them. But we took him round then. Sent that out to him. Somebody else come and picked him up and it went on. I didn't even ask the jam. And he really wanted to tell the story. Many difference in there. Although when I was at the... I was once at a... I was the only secretary down at Adcoste, down the big building place here. And the managing director, he's a Battle of Britain man, you know. But, and he used to generally pull me in the office and, you know, have a bit crack about this and that and t'other. He'd been at this big reunion thing and he'd been talking to the man who was in the same predicament as me. And I often wondered, like, if... I never... Just a little interest, that's all, you know. But I thought he'd been sort of dropped members to organise the party's hands, you know, into receiving messages into when to strike and where to strike and one thing or another, which they did in France, you know, they organised them like that in France. But if he was dropped for that reason, he had a hell of a job. But I would say, like, he was an officer of pretty high standing, like, you know. And he had battled us out, yeah.
You can't recall his rank?
I think I could, but I'm not sure. I'm not so certain. He could have been a lieutenant colonel, or he could have been a brigadier general, I didn't know. But he had no cap on when he went with me, like we were in the dark. Like you say, them days, you made your mind up, you did a thing, and you got on with, you know. I hadn't really a lot of talk with him. All I knew was he was British. And it was my job to, like, sort of save his life, sort of style, you know.
When you carried out a raid or an ambush, did the Germans follow up with much of the area?
We used to fly, you know. Hit and run tactics, you know. Off.
The Germans didn't take it out of the villages.
That's why. No, we used to get way away. No, we used to. We used to get too. I believe the Germans would know who we were and what we were. I don't believe that. I wouldn't fancy my chances at Curtis, so I'll tell you the truth.
But the local population didn't suffer because of your presence.
No, well, we tried to keep right in the mountains out the road, them, you see. That in the beginning, they were afraid of that. That's why we left the villages to go in the mountains. See, we would have been cutting our own throats if we'd brought them. No. But they did in Yugoslavia, of course, because they had big operations. They used the scarce earth policy. But in where we were, in Italy, I didn't know nobody that... and I was lucky I got in a part where the villages was a close-knit community and very rare. They let each other down, you know. They're real good people. I thought they were great people.
Did it never occur to you that you probably could have got across the mountains into Switzerland?
No,
safety? You didn't?
They tried. Everybody. That was a conception. When I moved from the main prison camp up in the working party prison camp, everybody that come to me with this idea of escaping, we were, I believe it was 60 or 80 miles from the Brenner Pass. Once you got through the Brenner Pass into Switzerland, for you the war's over. Not prison camp. Proper camp, clean clothes, 3 meals a day, pictures, ice cream, milk, beer, everything. You're a gentleman, you know. And all the lads are by, we can make it. Yannick Inertians, the Brennerpass, was his main supply line down in Italy. And there was a soldier machine only every 10 yards. You couldn't get nothing there. There's only one way, in my opinion, if you'd had a good guide, a real 100% or wanted to get out of Italy into Switzerland, maybe it was possible at certain parts of the mountains, but you'd have gone like that. You know, you'd have wanted an expert, real top class expert advice to get over the mountain into Italy, into Switzerland. Because the Germans had the Brennerpass and right round it. There doesn't chance nothing happening to that, you know, that was main supply line. No, you couldn't get there. That's why I went the other way towards Venice. I thought the best idea for me and my mate was to get to Venice and find some patriotic sailors and get to sea and go down the coast, you know. If you could get a fishing boat. And there was people that was absconding, you know, from Northern Italy and going down to where the British and the Americans had landed, you know. And at that particular time, the British Navy rolled the Adriatic, you know, and I thought, well, if we can get a boat and somebody to help us, we'll maybe get 200 or 300 miles down there and get picked up. And that was the only, because I didn't fancy fighting Yugoslavia, language problems. See, another thing, if you're fighting with a foreign band, they have no feeling for you, for your comfort, for your life, and nothing, have they? And I was wanting to get back to my own land, if possible. I'd rather fight with the Durhams, just fight with Yugoslavians and Italians and bloody people like that. But these people have stopped us before we got to Venice, you know. And it was a beautiful Alpine village, and they said, why, they don't belong, they just sit it out here.
Were you able to keep in touch with what was happening in the war and in Italy itself?
Oh, I had radios in the village.
So you knew where the Allies were?
Aye. I knew when they got the casino, no, I thought they were going to be there for just as well. See, and the High Times kept saying, where they at? Where's the Americans at and the British at? I said, well, they find it to be going, you know, it'll take time. And when I first went there, they said, oh, a month, 6 weeks to be here, which was feasible. Because different points of and the Germans had, you know, any odd first circumstances, one thing or another, they got stuck, and we were stuck there for 2 years nearly, you know. It kept so many troops busy, I suppose, the Italian landings, you know.
Have you any other memories of the time that you were there that we haven't spoken about?
No, we did. No, not really, nearly. I'd like to say that the people, you know, I was very, very beholden to them. And I know when the Yanks came and the...
What was the first intimation you had that the Americans were close?
What was
happening to you?
One of the... I didn't believe it, so I'll be quite frank. And this day sticks in my memory for another reason, which I'll tell you about, because I feel a little bit ashamed about it at times, but it sticks to me crop, and I'll tell you about it, I'll get it off my mind. But when this Italian person came to the... We were in the Low Mountains then, for the road, because we kept picking Germans up, you know, and, you know, and I don't know why, because we didn't want them.
What do you mean you were picking Germans up?
They were knocking them off, the stragglers and things like that, you know. And, but you say, in our valley, all the bridges was blown when the war finished. I don't know exactly. I would surmise there were thousands of Germans. Couldn't get nowhere. All the valley was pinned off, and we were sat there, you know, and we were in a quiet position until the Yanks came. And this bloke came up to me, and I tell him, he says, Americani. I said, are they not English? No, he said, Muricani. Muricani, 2 kilometres down the road. I thought, well, I better make sure. I've been careful all this time. I better make sure. And I went down by the roadside, and my mate says, I would better go up now just to make sure. he said, his machine gone up. And this first tank that come around the corner, he You see, I'd never seen an American soldier before, not in action, you know, and they have a different type of helmet to me, and it's pretty similar to the German one. See, and I said, hey, steady on it, might be German, this just to make sure. And you know, when we got to look at the tank, there was a star in the ring around it, whatever it is, and I thought, wait, sit still and I'll go on long, and I walked along the road, and this bloke popped his head out, and he says, any of you people speak English? And I said, yeah, I speak a little English. Why? And he got down, he says, do you mind saying that again? I says, I speak a little English. What do you want to know? Why? He says, is there any Germans knocking about? I says, there's about 10,000 up there, just around the corner. And he looked at me, and he thought I was pulling his leg. And I was that happy, you know, and I was geeing him up. I remember pulling with him. I was happy as a bloody kid. Never forget. Never forget. And I says, I'll tell you another thing, you lucky man. He said, how do you mean? I said, my mates want to shoot you. Think you're German. He went as white as a sheet when he said the big machine gun around the corner. He said, oh, God. I said, there's a bottleneck 2 miles further down. There's no bridges. Nothing can get over there. I said, they're just there. And he says, I'll take you back to the officer's things and get a little bit of interrogation and a bit of a bath and... I says, you're my man, buddy. Aye, not far. He took me back to this, like a school place, village I'd never been in, I tell you the truth, I'd never been there. And laid out on the trestles, that was jungum chocolate. Well, I couldn't eat that, you know, I'd been sick. And, you know, they got us a bath in the mail, and they give us this American uniform. And like with no chevrons on or nothing, you know, and he said, would you stay with us for a while and do a bit like interpret?
What date was this?
Why, it was about the, it was supposed to be a day for the Pakistan, a day or two for the Pakistan to wear, you know.
Around about May 1945.
Somewhere around about there, yeah, yeah.
You said that there was a story that you were going to tell.
Yeah, well, that was when I was coming down, I was somewhere about 10 minutes off the bottom of the main road, coming down the mountainside, you know, and everybody was jumping up and firing the guns into the air, you know, the war was over and all this paraphernalia. And I was walking past these German people, soldiers, and this officer stepped out and he says, are you English? I said, yeah, why? He says, couldn't you do something for us? I said, well, what do you want to do for you? Like, you know, I'll do anything for you. I said, I've been a prisoner one. I said, I know what it's like. I said, yeah, what's the matter like? He says, we're afraid. I said, why are you afraid? He says, we're afraid they're going to take us up the mountains and shoot us. And he maybe had a point. Like, I never occurred to me. I was that happy. And I said, no, don't, you know. I said, he says, we'll very much like you to be your prisoner, you know. See, there was nobody there then, just me. The youngster was 3 or 4 miles back. Well, I said, I cannot do that. I said, honest, I cannot. I said, I'm going down there now to meet them and tell the people. I said, the war's over. I said, look, you know, the war's over, finished. So I honest got it in my head that they did. And I'm not far wrong. And I thought, I think I could have been hasty, like, you know, and in the heat of the you know, in waiting all that time and to get recaptured, sort of style, and then all of a sudden, all I thought about was, well, why, it's over for me, I'm going home. And that poor fella, he maybe he's at a point, because there's some of them, I know if the Yugoslavian lads is getting all of them, I know what happened to them, you know. They had a bone to pick, and I mean a big bone. And see, I didn't like to interfere in domestic troubles like that. But I think I should have pointed out to them, and they maybe would have took a little bit notice of us than us. And I should have maybe explained a little bit about the Geneva Conventions and explained to them that I'd been a prisoner of war. And I think the Yugoslavian lads might have took a little bit notice of me, because they sort of admired me, things I'd done, like in the past, one thing and another I'd done.
What kind of German infantry were they? Were they just a normal soldier, or were they SS or Panzer or what?
They were a mess. When they come back with bikes and prams and we get here in our poor fellas. They were bait to the world. I mean, there were plays when they stopped, you know, they couldn't go any further. There were plays that were always our, just like me and you were and everybody else, you know. They were demoralised, they were shattered. They'd been pushed right away the full length of Italy, you know, and walking on the bare feet, sort of style. The poor fellas, I was a little bit sorry for them at times. I mean, there was a lot of them. There was tanks, and there was armoured cars, bugs of infantry. I tell you, I was sat on the side watching them go past. And I was maybe, times only 50 yards off them. Tanks in the old column and the I was saying to myself, "Why are you going up there, bunny lad? But you'd have to come back and out of there." And they were going up the passage, you know, and when they come to the part where the bridge should have been, or the crossing should have been, they couldn't get across. They were blown to smithereens, you know, and they stopped, they were stopped there in Old Valley. And they're a hell of a lot, because, I mean, they call it a camp for displaced persons. And that's what he wanted me to do a bit of interpreting, you know, to get the...
This was the Americans, though.
Aye.
After the
fed us. Oh, ah, yeah, yeah, they fed us up there. Did you hear that? Yeah. There was one night he said to me, "Do you like opera?" I said, "I like to sing song in the public, I was better." But I said, "Why, it's a night out." Off we went to Benny's, but we didn't say much opera. We were drinking all night. And we had a gallant night, because I'd never been in Benny's, you know. In fact, I can't remember now where I was at. It was just, I remember this Italian guy telling us about all them little bridges, you know, the bridge of size and the bridge of this and the bridge of two there. We were just looking for somewhere to all in where there were some girls and music and everybody was celebrating the night.
So you were with this American unit for a while?
Aye.
What were you doing with them?
I used to go about in his jeep with them, you know, organising. I think one of the reasons was he wanted a lot of guns taken up. And I think I explained to him that a lot of them would be hidden away and they would never get them. And he asked, what good are they to them? I said, when we go home, bunny lad, I says, I think there's going to be a bit of eruptions on, you know. I says, they're going to finish the job that we should have finished. He says, we just get what we can get. See, they'd made all these drops, all these different things, and they thought we might have swing them all back up again and even the couldn't be free of arms, sort of stuff, but it wasn't like that. They had them in all over, you know. Then they were going to use them as possible after the war, you know. I stopped with them, you know, a few days and that, and then he come one day and he says, there's a plane going today down to Barry. I didn't know where Barry was, it's the other side of Italy, to Naples, down the east coast. And he says, if you want, I can get you a ride on that plane. And he says, when you get to Barry, you get a ride from Barry across land to Naples. And there you report to this camp for interrogation. Eh?
Have they informed the British that you were with them?
No. They had no contact. Because I always thought that it was the British that was coming up that side. You know, I thought there'd be no problem. I got a little bit of a size when it was young, you know. And so I said to them, I said, where's our lads at, you know? And the father over there, and Mars, we over there. So I stopped with them, see? We were what they termed as displaced persons, see? And,
how did they treat the people in the area, the Americans, when they came?
Oh, they were all right. This brigadier fella, I got him lodgings, you know. I got him, he wanted a place to stop. You know, officers, and I'd been gone to this lady's house. And she was a lovely cook and that, you know, what she had, she was brilliant. And she had a big, a villa. I suppose they call them villas, but to me, you know, the big bungalows, about 8 rooms, lovely. She must have been pretty well off, you know, before, that, you know. And I told her, I said, he's wanting a billet, I said, if he could put him up and do his washing and feed him and that. I said, you get all sorts of food and that. Because the bugs are food and that. And see, he went down, he stopped it. And I tell you about 3 days after, he said, oh, that billet you've got me, he says, it's perfect. He says, it's beautiful. And he had his own bathroom and his own office and all the meals cooked. And she was a tremendous cook. And he used to take tins of this and tins of that, and she used to mock him always once he didn't, and that he was out of the moon with day. Hey.
Do you recall the names of any of the Americans that you befriended, became friends with?
No, there's only one. There's only one proud of the fact that he was Scotch. He was as proud as bloody punch. And somebody had told him that I was Scotch. Of course, if you belong to Newcastle, which I, everybody, when they asked me, you tell them they're a city. Say, I was saying Newcastle. And when I said Newcastle, he said, ah, we have a Scotchman with us. And I thought, well, it's a waste of time arguing, you know, with him. So right on them, they brought him along. Apparently, his father and his grandfather were Scotch. He'd actually been born in America, but he's proud as bloody punch because his father and his grandfather were Scotch. And he was the proudest punch. And me and him had many a bit crack, and he was a grand lad, eh?